Okay, what are we talking about?
A few questions about social
stress. Try to speak a little faster, I can hear you. Just turn around, yeah.
There's a few questions with social structure and how we're going to implement it in Swansea in different ways. At the moment, we're in the, we're quite small, so we just got the Brahmachari ashram, but we have some of the devotees in the ashram, and we're giving them, paying them a certain wage for working in the restaurant, staying over, and then we accommodate them in the ashram. So,
we're sort of at the last phase of that membership.
Can we record it?
I'm also. Go ahead, record it. I'm recording for a podcast, but you record it. And we added a sixth category, right? We had five. We had a sympathizer, which is just someone who, they like Krishna consciousness, but they're not really doing anything, or they may or may not, but you don't know. And, you know, they may or may not be following Krishna conscious practices, but they like us, and they may help us in some way. You can say people who, you know, regularly donate on the street or sympathizers. Then there's helpers, which are people who identify with Krishna consciousness as their religion, and they give support, but it's not committed support. It's not regular support. It's irregular support. Sometimes they give, sometimes they don't. You can't time down to a monthly 10 quid or 50 quid or 100 quid because they're not yet steady, so they're sort of a helper. And when I say donation, that means also service. Sometimes they do service, sometimes you don't see them for a year. And then there's these words are so good because I don't know the English equivalent, but then there's the supporter, and he's someone who's a steady donor or a steady servant. He lives outside, maintains himself. He's a steady donor, and he gives regularly. He's giving, you know, 50 quid a month, 10 quid, whatever he's giving, and, you know, he comes on Sundays to do some service, or either one or the other, or both. And of these both supporters and helpers, they may be initiated, although I really question whether someone should be initiated if they're not committed. In other words, if someone's going to be initiated who lives outside and maintains themselves, and these people are self-sufficient people, I mean, then an initiated devotee is someone who has to make a regular contribution to the Krishna consciousness movement according to their means. Whether it's financial, whether it's time, it's energy, but it isn't that, you know, whenever I want, you know, I'll see you next time. So they have to be committed in some way or another. And however, you may have people who are supporters who aren't strict in following the principles, but who are committed in terms of their support. So you get lots of different variations of that. And then you get now the volunteers. Volunteers are brahmacharis, brahmacharinis, who come and join, and you let them stay as volunteers for 5 years. And they're there with the idea that you're getting a 5-year training course. In that 5 years, what we've also incorporated is that they'll get the Bhakti Shastri as well, so they're getting a certain diploma or degree. They're obviously learning brahmachari life, they're learning sankirtan, temple life, simplicity, austerity, all the good things that in Vedic culture they would be getting for 20 years. We get 5 years, but after 5 years, you have to make up your mind. You can't stay longer than 5 years. Either you become a monk or a cleric, full-time monk or a cleric, or you go out and become a supporter. In other words, don't let them stay. They join at 20, right? So if they stay till 25, then at 25, someone, even if they left college or university or just came out after secondary school, they go back to the world and, you know, they can continue to develop a career. So it's not fair to keep someone on as just a volunteer for 10, 15 years because, you know, at 35, then they say, what do I do now? And it's too difficult. And deciding whether they should, what they should do, goes both ways. It's not just on the individual, but it's also the institution. And you have to be, you know, sort of impartial, that you're willing to let the person, you know, go and make his way in life, because that's their nature. And we see that probably a good percentage of those people are, and you encourage them. You encourage them, you want them to go out and make a lot of money so that they become, you know, regular donors and supporters, valuable supporters. Okay, so that's the volunteer. And now if a volunteer wants to become a monk, then first they should really be simple, austere, dependent. They're not an independent type of person. They're not people who want a percentage out of something. And they have those type of qualities, and then there should be a sort of a testing period, maybe another couple of years, but maximum 5, before they even sort of take a vow of being a monk. And that's sort of a natural thing for people who are lifelong brahmacharis, no problem. For those who are grihasthas, It's an extremely difficult thing to do, because on one side, the monk is someone who says, okay, I have no personal possessions, I'm fully dependent on the society, and conversely, the society has to then say, fine, don't worry about it, we'll take care of you for the rest of your life. In order to be able to say that, that's quite an easy thing to say for a brahmachari and a sannyasi. For a grihastha, you really have to sit down and work out how many grihasthas can you say, you know, don't worry, we'll take care of you. You don't know what's going to happen with your kids. You don't really have an education system. You don't have a gurukul or anything like that. So if they do homeschooling and so on, then say that, you know, then you have to have something to say about how many kids they have. Maybe they can only have one kid. If, for instance, like Tarakanath has got like a whole school of his own, his children, then that would mean for the parents to remain Krishna conscious, those kids would have to be homeschooled, and they would more or less have to be insulated from the rest of, you know, outside society. Where you do that, how you do that, it's really questionable that you can actually successfully do that. Have you got the infrastructure? And then, if they have, say, 3 kids, is it worth it for you to maintain a man on the basis of a man's service, because the wife is raising the children, she's homeschooling the kids, and you're also maintaining 2-3 kids on top of that? I mean, is that something financially viable for you? If you've got, you know, if Pete's bringing in 500 quid a day on Sankirtan, then it may be. But if he's not, if it's just someone who's working in the restaurant, you know, he's working for free, that's fine. But actually, he may be costing you 1,500, 2,000 quid a month to maintain his house, his family, and everything else. So this is a matter of economics and how you're living that you really need to sort of figure it out. It is what Prabhupada wanted. The question is whether you can do it. So these were the 5 categories. Sympathizers, helpers, supporters, the volunteer, and then the monks, who are the lifelong people. And then you may also have, fine. Now what we did in order to, because we're not sure that we want to tell all the grihasthas that don't worry about it, we'll take care of you for the rest of your life, because it's such a complex situation, we want to work into it. So we've added this 6th category, which is like the Ejhazi Semi. It's like the church I he's not an employee, but a church, not a member, but say an employee, a church employee, and he's a devotee who is very good. He was a very good volunteer, very good brahmachari, brahmacharinis. They married the grihasthas, and they could be actually sort of monks. They're on the level of monks, but two things. One is the institution may not be willing to take responsibility at present, and the other is that because of this relative insecurity of what we're able or not able to do, he's not willing to give up all personal possessions. In other words, he's got a flat somewhere. You know, he's got an inheritance to come in the future, or he's even got 20,000 quid in the bank. So we say, fine, we'll maintain you at minimum wage, which means that, you know, you pay your national insurance, you pay your pension, and you pay your health insurance. We'll pay that. I will pay you minimum wage. And then you continue doing service like you've done service before. What that means, in the example, for instance, of a grihastha who has three kids, means we're paying you, I don't know what the minimum wage is. What's the minimum wage now?
$5.35.
How much?
$5.35
a month.
An hour.
Well, $5.35 an hour.
Yeah, so
that's
week,
like $4,200 a week.
Yeah.
So we're paying you, say, fine, we're paying you $800 a month, and that's because that's the legal requirement. What time? On top of which, we'll pay your health insurance, as well as your retirement. Beyond that, we don't give you anything. You have to take care of everything. You have to feed your kids. You have to compose yourself. He's like an employee. But, you know, we're paying him minimum, that's all we can pay, so you have to pay him. You have to pay him so that he can maintain it, and he has to make do with that. If that's fine for him, if he's satisfied on getting the minimum, because the mentality of this devotee is that he wants to stay with the institution, he wants to give his life, he wants to live like he did, like a volunteer. But, and then, by the way, you know, volunteers, they can have personal possessions, they may have inheritance, they may have, but they don't handle that stuff. They just leave it with their parents until they decide what they're going to do. If they're monks, they give it all up. And if they're, if they become like church employees, let me use that word, although it's not, you have to find a better name. I can get you a better name later, but if they're employees, then they're living like they were sort of minimal standard, but they have to take care of everything themselves. But you have to pay them. It's not fair to take service from that person and not give him something that ensures his pension in the future and that takes care of all of his health needs. But it's at the minimum. And then that person also has to live like a Brahmin. He doesn't watch TV, they don't go to movies. They're just like they were when they were brahmacharis and brahmacharinis, very strict people. But you're maintaining them at the minimum. So therefore, when you say that you're paying someone, you're employing someone, then there's another person who isn't at the standard. This person will work just like a brahmachari. You tell him, okay, we're on a marathon. You're going out 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, and he does everything. He functions just like a monk or a volunteer. And you know, they'll do 724, whatever you tell them. They're fully surrendered devotees, but you have to maintain them at the minimum standard, legal minimum standard. And then there's another category, which are people who are employees. And that's someone who tells you, I'll work in the restaurant, but I only work from 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. You have to pay me, you know, I'm not willing to work at the minimum, or maybe he is willing to work. In other words, he's a conditional employee. Either his condition is his hours, his condition is his days, his condition is his wages. He wants 8 quid a day, 8 quid an hour, and, you know, he's such a good person that you're willing to pay him that. And he may be a devotee, or he may be your bookkeeper, I don't know. But, and that person's an employee. And then he's like in a different category. He's more like, he falls either in the supporter category or the helper category, but he's an employee amongst those. So those are the six categories. So if you've got someone living at, my question is, why would someone be living in an ashram if he's an employee?
That way we can charge rent for living in the ashram. They can take it a little less cost.
Well, you should be paying him. If he's an employee, you should be paying him at least the minimum.
Yeah.
But then he should pay for living in the ashram.
Yeah.
That's fine.
He likes to live in the ashram. We have to follow up as we have ashram life, but
fine.
Still desire some.
In the long term, it may not be good just because his mood is different. In other words, what will the effect of someone being paid living in the ashram have on your volunteer brahmacharis? They may think, wow, you know, I should do this in the future also. I'll just, you know, I'll be paid and live in the ashram. So when you talk about a brahmachari ashram is, we got nothing. You know, we don't own anything. We don't get paid. So you may want to think, if you have one person, that's one thing. If you got, you know, five employees living in the ashram with three brahmacharis, all those brahmacharis can end up being employees pretty soon. Because of, that's going to also be the mood. But if it's, you know, only, if it's not affecting the mood at the present, that's fine. But an ashram's not an ashram. What you may then want to do is buy a house and rent it out to those people. Buy a house near the temple and rent it to them, in which case you're making money, you've got real estate, and you're renting it out to them, and you know they're living together as devotees, but they're living as in an employee ashram rather than a brahmachari ashram.
If the church employees went to getting paid minimum wage, they'll do whatever's asked, like 12 hours a week, 7 days a week. When we ask them to do extra, then we're paying for those extra hours.
No, they get minimum. There are those type of devotees who say, listen, I'm going to give my whole life to Krishna consciousness, but I just don't, you know, I'm going to be inheriting 100,000 from my parents. I don't know if I give it to the institution. I don't know whether you're going to be able to maintain me and my family. Or and on top of that, it says, and yeah, that's the basic thing. Or even if I don't have anything, but I don't know what's going to happen with my kids, you know. I don't know what the future is. So just pay me the minimum. I'll make do with that. I'll work out just like I always did. And but you know, he doesn't get more. He's not like your employee. He'll say, okay, listen, you want me to work 7 days, you give me overtime. You pay me extra. This person is, you're giving him the legal minimum. And he's willing to give the maximum in terms of service. But you're just not taking the responsibility for his future in terms of when he can't work, and you're not taking responsibility for his health care. That's, and he's willing to accept that, and that's fair. The main thing is to be fair, not that we have this situation where someone's done 15 years work, service, 20 years service, and then all of a sudden he goes crippled. And then you tell him, well, sorry, we can't maintain you anymore. And then, you know, he's paid no health insurance benefits, he has no retirement pension, and all of a sudden you got this person, you just, you know, you kicked out. But we can't do that to people. We can't treat people like that. So either we say, fine, if you go crippled after, you know, 8 years of service, don't worry about it. We'll take care of you for the rest of your life. Now that's a big thing to say. You got to make sure, you know, you can really do that. It's not just a matter of sentiment. It's also an economic consideration. Or you're telling him, no, we don't feel that we're willing to do that. We'll take your full-time service, but we'll pay you the minimum so that you can be guaranteed that, you know, you're paying this. The government, who certainly got a lot more resources than we do, they'll take care of you.
So fair for you. Is fully dependent, and we should be putting something aside for
future. If you're doing the months, the volunteers, it's fine, it's 5 years, they come and go. But once someone says, you know, fine, I'm here forever, and you say, okay, we're taking responsibility for you, then actually for the welfare of this the society, and to ensure in the future, you should sort of be putting aside the same as you would be putting aside for someone for pension. You should put aside X amount into some kind of fund, some fund that makes money, so that when you've got, you know, I don't know, well, say your generation, all of a sudden you've got six devotees who become redundant. If they become too old to do sankirtan, too old to make money, that becomes a real burden on the yatra, unless over the past 30 years you've put away, even if you're putting away 25 quid a head per month, that's, you know, 600 pounds a year or 1,000 pounds a year over 20 years. You know, if you put it into your own pension fund or some other kind of thing, I don't know if pension funds are going to be of any value. If the economy collapses, you'll just lose the money. But you could put it into real estate. You could be buying property. And if everything maintains and you're renting that property, you're getting $1,000 a month rental from that property, that could be maintaining your devotees, the rental property. Or you could then decide to sell that real estate, because if anything holds its value, real estate will. So you may want to do that. You may, you know, just want to buy some property, and then the money that you put aside, it's earmarked. The money you're putting aside pays the mortgage, and that property is earmarked for the maintenance of, you know, so many months when they're old. So you've got something there, something that's relative security. Of course, there's no guaranteed security.
Brahmacharis, a lot more senior to new brahmacharis, but should, how do we treat them the same rules? So, like, younger brahmacharis might see older brahmacharis have more things with the younger ones.
In terms of, well, things, I mean, that's really a decision that you make in terms of necessities for service. Prema's got a computer, but he, you know, designs logos, does artwork, and other things. That doesn't mean that every brahmachari should have a computer. That's a decision based on service. But say Prema's a monk, and, you know, he takes the vow of a monk. And I would, in one sense, brahmachari, you may want to consider that everyone stays in white. And, you know, if someone says, yes, I'm staying, you know, lifelong monk, and that's when he takes a vow of brahmachari at 5 years, and it really means something. In other words, he doesn't get married anymore. Of course, yeah, you got another issue to deal with. What happens when your brahmachari monk, after, you know, 15 years of Krishna consciousness, decides to get married? Does he stay a monk, or, you know, does he then become a church employee? Depends. But say Prema's a monk, he's there for 10 years, he has nothing. He doesn't have a computer. The computer's not his. The computer belongs to the temple. He doesn't have any possessions. Everything belongs to him. He doesn't have a bank account. He doesn't have personal possessions. He has nothing. He's Niskanchana. Niskanchanasya Bhagavat Bhajanon Kasya. He has no possessions. Just like the one-year-old brahmachari has no possessions. But according to service, the church may allot him more or less. But that's the church's property. So he lives in the same way as they do. Is Niskanchana. It is a monk has nothing. And a brahmachari, a volunteer, over those 5 years, he may have something because he hasn't decided what he's going to do in the future. But he has no access to that. He just leaves it with his parents or relatives or whatever. Whatever he's got, you know. Brahmacharis don't have their own cars in their own names. They don't come with money. They don't have resources. They just keep that to their parents. I'm, you know, going to be a volunteer for 5 years with the Hare Krishnas. You take care of my stuff for me. Plus.
So, parents might want to give them something, but
to go
through a temple.
No. Brahmacharis don't get anything from their parents. They can give it to the temple, and it belongs to the temple. But even if, you know, someone's parents decides to give 10,000 quid a month to the temple, that brahmachari lives the same way as someone who has nothing, who gets nothing from their parents. They all live the same. Everyone lives the same. Volunteers and monks, same standard of life. So if the parents give, they don't give to the brahmachari or brahmacharini, they give to the temple. And if the devotee is not willing to do that, then he doesn't join the ashram. Then he can either be an employee, a temple employee, a church employee, or he can be a supporter. But he's not a brahmachari. Brahmachari means he's learning how to live with nothing. Just be a humble servant.
So if you have Tony, who has just come for a trial, he's been there for a few weeks, and then this situation after Christmas where then sent the movies home to see my parents for a couple of days at Christmas. So we're gonna, he's asked us to pay for a travel home.
Yeah. Well, now here's what we do. First, you bring them in for a 3 month trial period. And then, when someone's coming to the temple and they're fully dependent, you have to cover their expenses. In other words, if he's going out on Sankapat and doing everything that you want, then you got to be pay his expenses to go home and visit his parents, obviously. After 3 months, then you decide whether you want him to stay for the 1 month. 3 months is like the introductory course, and then there's the 1 year initial course, and then after the 1 year, then you decide whether you let him stay on for 5 years, for the 5 year thing. And it's a very nice thing because then it, and if you think this guy's not suited, you know, like say Marcel, then instead of trying to force him in and then he feels bad leaving, then you say, Marcel, you did the 1 year, great. You did the, you know, basic brahmachari training. Now go out to be a supporter, make lots of money, and, you know, give 50% to this guy. And then he goes out. But if you think this person's really got potential and is there, then fine, okay. And after 1 year, okay, you're on. You know, you can stay for the 5 year brahmachari training. But when they have nothing, when they're fully dependent, then you have to cover their expenses. But you decide what they can do. A brahmachari can visit his parents twice a year. If someone's visiting his parents every week, you say, hang on a minute, you're not part of the brahmachari ashram. You phone him every week, but whatever. I'm just saying, whatever the standard, you set a standard. But if they're giving everything, then yeah, you have to cover their expenses.
Our level of commitment to them depends on how, like, first 3 months will be a lot different commitment to them, and if they
someone comes for that 5-year period, and say something happens to them when they're volunteer, say he breaks a leg, or say that he hurts his back, and it should be done contractually. You should have a contract. In Hungary, we have contracts both for the volunteers and everything. Then you're not bound to take care of him for his life because he's just a volunteer. If someone comes and he's on, he goes crippled after 3 years of Sankatan, you're a volunteer. We're not taking responsibility from you. You're coming here, you're volunteering, it's at your own risk. While you're here, we'll take care of your needs, but we're not taking care of you for life.
If just after I become a 5-year period, fully commit, and soon after something happens, then we're there for life.
That's it, you made the vow. They make a vow, you made a vow. So he may go on to be doing Sankirtan for the next 50 years, but if something happens to him, you've made a vow that we're taking care of you, whatever, come what may. We're not throwing you out of here, no matter what happens, provided that he sticks to the spiritual principles and he's fully dependent. So if someone, after 6 years, he goes crippled, then okay, if all you can do is, you're sitting in the kitchen, you're peeling potatoes for the rest of your life, that's fine with us. We'll take care of you, we're family, we're sticking together now. And so when you tell that to that person, that we're taking care of you, you really have to know what you're doing. And you have to have the resources to be able to do that. So that's why in evaluating, you may want to say, we're only willing to take brahmacharis, lifelong committed brahmacharis, who you really think have the ability to stay brahmachari for all life. We're only taking them on as volunteers because we know that there's associate monks, because it's something that, okay, what you see is what you get. It's only this one mouth that we got to feed. We don't know, how many children this person's going to have. So in the interim period, until we can actually sort of come to grips with the whole system, we'll accept you as a church employee, where it means that you're all out. You're like a full-on surrendered devotee doing whatever you're told to do. But we're giving you the minimum wage, and you live according to that. 550, that's pretty high. I remember days of yore, it was 40 quid a week, or something like 140 a month, or something. 35. But otherwise, it's not fair to them. It's not fair to them that, they're giving everything, but we're saying, we're not entitled. Even when the person says, it doesn't matter, I don't mind, but he will mind. When he does go crippled, when he does have his kids, when something happens, then he'll say, but I gave 20 years of my life to Krishna consciousness, and you mean, now that I can't work, I'm just here on my own. So then it's not fair. Then you say, no, we gave you minimum salary, we paid your national insurance and your health benefits, the government will support, you will get whatever everyone else gets in this country, and you agreed to that on a minimal basis. So that's fair. And even devotees will say, no, I don't care, I don't care, you can't buy it. They will care later on. There's so many people out there, disgruntled people, who said they don't care, but then later they care, because, when you're young, you don't know. When you grow up, things are a little different. So that's when you got to think, wow, yeah, if someone's working all out, I have to pay this person 800 quid a month, 900 quid a month. But that's the reality of life, and that's what's fair. And ultimately, your month doesn't cost any less anyway. If you're maintaining him and his clothes and his food and his trip to India, for these church employees, you don't take them to India. He saves his money. If he can't save his money, that's his stuff though. He doesn't come to you, can you pay my trip to India? No. We're paying you wage, bus. You live out of that. You have your flat. How you live is up to you. If you live in something that's 200 quid a month or 600 quid a month, that's your business. They don't eat at the temple. Or if they eat at the temple, they have to pay for that. fine, you can eat at the temple, but it's monthly you pay. In other words, they have to cover all of their expenses, all of their life, whatever their costs are, they have to cover their costs. Go to India, how many dhotis they buy, how they live, you know, the birthday parties for their kids, where the kids go to school, they have tutors, they have this, they have that. I don't think we're getting much traffic over there. Probably the only traffic would be at the airport, people heading off to different places for New Year's Eve. Yeah.
With regards to our kind of management structure here in Swansea, we've got kind of everyone does this to our kind of says, we've got, it's quite simple in a way. Always rest with Tarakanav and we'll follow that. How will that develop as we grow? We'll be able to maintain that kind of simplicity.
Well, it just depends on how much Tarakanav can manage hands on. If, you know, the idea was say now you're getting into buying a property in Cardiff, and which will probably take you 2-3 years to swing. But you could easily imagine that within 5 years it'll develop into something like Swansea, and or even more, because it's such a bigger place. And then ultimately, if you want to actually accommodate, for instance, these devotees for the church employees, your monks and so on, if you want them to be Krishna conscious, you gotta somehow or another have them be able to live in a facility that's not downtown Cardiff. Can't raise kids. If the kids can't stay Krishna conscious, the parents won't stay Krishna conscious. You know, if the kids' friends watch TV, the kids are going to want to watch TV. If the kids watch TV, the parents watch TV. If the parents watch TV, they end up stop chanting rounds and following the principles. So then you end up losing everybody. So, I mean, what we've always discussed is somewhere between Swansea and Cardiff, get a place from which devotees can commute. And that place can be a place where, you know, once again, you have, if it's some kind of little resort where you've got little chalets, and you're renting these chalets to your church employees. So, you know, they're just renting it. And if they don't follow the principles, you know, the rent, the lease is over, you kick them out. But where you got your church employees can be there, you can even have supporters, very Krishna conscious supporters can be living there. Anyone who's willing to, can you turn up the heat a little? Anyone who's willing to, you know, chant 60 rounds, follow the principles, they're TV-less, they're very strict. But in order to have that, that means you've got three facilities. You know, Tarakanath's not going to be able to have his pulse on everything that goes on. So he's going to have, he's going to be more like the regional secretary, national secretary, and you're going to have like presidents or people in charge. It's like you're in charge of the restaurant. So someone who's in charge of Cardiff, someone who's in charge of whatever it is, whether it's a farm, you may get into it. And then some people may be there, they may do just a little gardening. Because if you've got a restaurant in Cardiff, you've got a restaurant there, Prabhupada's idea was that produce, ghee, milk products, it all goes there. For instance, how much do you pay for milk products monthly? Milk. I know Pragosh does something phenomenal, like hundreds of thousands of pounds on milk a year. So you're spending like 50,000 a year, 40,000 a year on milk.
300 a month.
Yeah, so that's 4,000. So 4,000. If, you know, his restaurants have about 10 times the turnover, so he's spending, I forgot, but he was talking to Shami Sundar about it. So if you've got two restaurants, you're easily going to be spending, now it's 3,000, say in Cardiff, you'll have, you know, 3-4 times that income. So you'll spend, you know, 20,000, so it's 25,000, and if it keeps going up, for that you could be maintaining cows, you could be producing milk. This is what Prabhupada wanted, you know. He wanted that our produce and our milk and ghee is provided for from the through the restaurants. The restaurants, the temples, the preaching, whatever. There has to be an economic way of doing that. The real issue there is transport. The transport costs don't become just impractical. Anyway, that then becomes a real economy and a reason why how you can actually even maintain other people. That you can maintain other people who aren't doing sankirtan and so on, but who are doing gardening and maintaining cows, because they're supplying you the produce. It's making the running of the restaurants feasible. Instead of paying karmis, we're doing it ourselves. Except the fact that our milk costs much more than subsidized milk that you buy, unless you can get subsidy from the government.
Should I call about a Kaddish here?
Fine, yeah, let's find out about a Kaddish here.